It's me, Angela Daly, your Rule of Law Rules podcast host. Welcome back to our regular listeners, and if it's your first time, hi there, and hope you enjoy the podcast. You've tuned in to the Rule of Law Rules podcast from the Konrad Adenauer Foundation. In this podcast, we talk to international experts about the rule of law in the age of digitalisation and gain insights into recent developments in different parts of the world. Today, you're joining me for the sixth Rule of Law Rules podcast and the last in our first series on data protection and governance. So far, we've spoken to guests from South America, Europe, the Middle East and Africa to discuss developments in data protection and governance. We've spoken a lot about the EU's General Data Protection Regulation, its implementation in the EU, and its influence outside of the EU as well. Today we're back in Asia for our June guest, Dr. Lee San Natalie Pang. Natalie is Senior Lecturer in the Department of Communications and New Media and Principal Investigator in the Centre for Trusted Internet and Community at the National University of Singapore. Natalie has also been working on a project on data innovations and cultures in smart cities, which has also been funded by the Konrad Adenauer Foundation. So hi there, Natalie. Welcome to the podcast and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Angela. Thanks for having me today.
So, regular listeners will know that we like to start and end our episodes with some quick-fire questions to introduce our guest and your views on data protection and governance. So I'm going to start a sentence and you can finish it with the first thing that comes to mind. Data protection is my favourite topic because...
it affects my life.
The first time I realised the importance of data protection was...
I guess it's when I realized that there are certain identifiers that are linked to many other things that I do, including what I buy online and how old I am, what school I've been to, and so on.
Data protection is a typically Singaporean thing because...
protection and innovation goes like hand in glove. And I think on that note, data protection and therefore innovation is a Singaporean thing because it drives so much of what Singapore envisions to be.
Great. Thank you so much, Natalie. So let's move to our longer questions. First of all, can you tell us more about how you came to be working on digitalization, data governance, data protection?
Well, I guess I've been kind of looking at this topic of digitalization for a long time. Ever since I started my career in academia, I've been looking at social impacts of the internet and more broadly also digitalization and various aspects of digitalization, right? So some years ago, I also kind of reached a juncture where I realized that the internet and increasingly a lot of internet applications also involves data, right? The collection of data as well as the analysis and how data is used. So yeah, I started looking at the, you know, various, I guess, aspects of governing such data, you know, and I realized that different jurisdictions, they then have very different kinds of frameworks and expectations about how personal data is going to be managed.
On that note, Natalie, can you give us an overview of the situation for data protection and data governance in your region, either Southeast Asia or Asia more generally? Can you tell us a bit more about whether countries have been introducing legislation, have they set up new regulatory institutes, or are they using other kinds of initiatives, maybe not law or regulation, to deal with data protection and governance?
That's a great question. In my part of the world, in Southeast Asia especially, a lot of, I guess, thinking and debates have been going on about data protection. In Singapore, there is what we call the Personal Data Protection Commission. That body, right, that unit looks after the governance as well as the laws and regulations that protects personal data. In other countries, that is not always formalized, although there are several developments that's going on, even as we speak right now, right? Like for instance, in China, China just launched some months ago already, right? This new regulation on personal data protection, and that's pretty exciting. And I think what comes out of it, you know, in terms of how it's implemented, the extent to which some of these regulations can be enforceable, that remains to be seen. And in Korea, I think countries like South Korea and even India, right, there's a lot of, I guess, lessons that are drawn from the GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation in EU, and that's many of the principles from the GDPR do inform the debates and thinking on data protection in my part of the world, at least from what I can see.
And so what do you think about this? Do you think it's appropriate that the GDPR does inform what's going on in Southeast Asia and other parts of Asia? What do you think in general about the governance situation in your part of the world?
You know, there are some principles of GDPR. I think it's great that we do have something like the GDPR to look to, right, in terms of looking at what the EU is actually enforcing and upholding as principles for data protection. But in terms of how it translates and how it actually becomes principles that's entirely, or rather that becomes principles that are adopted in its entirety, right, in different jurisdictions, I think it's a bit different from place to place. For instance, in contrast to the GDPR principle of data minimization, in Singapore, Singapore's data regulations actually provides more leeway in terms of how the collection or use and disclosure of data can be broader. Like whereas I think we see that in India and China, right, the regulations there uphold consent, informed consent, notification, and the necessity principles. But these principles, right, do not uphold sort of de facto, especially where we see also private entities, private companies, they are sort of able to evade some of these legal mandates, right? Or sometimes they sort of break those principles and they do face small penalties for breaking them. In the case of South Korea, in South Korea, they introduced what they call the three laws of data, and most notably the Personal Information Protection Act, right? And to abide by the GDPR, right? And it's aligned very much with the key principles of GDPR. But of course, in terms of its implementation, even with the three laws of data in South Korea, we do see some non-consensual processing of personal data as well. Although that's been quite instrumental in their ability to battle the pandemic, right? Because of that provision for them to do this kind of non-consensual processing of personal data. But those exceptional use cases do continue to attract lots of debates and I guess contestations as well.
Sure. And I think quite a few of these themes are quite prominent kind of globally, including issues around enforcement, which is still something that needs to be worked on everywhere, I would say, or in almost everywhere. Moving a bit to your own work, Natalie, you have been working on a project looking at digitalization and smart cities. Can you tell us a bit more about this work? And can you tell us in particular what you think the data protection risks, challenges, even opportunities are that smart cities present?
My project looks at data governance and innovations in seven countries. So we cover Singapore, India, South Korea, Japan, China, Taiwan, and Hong Kong. So in each country, we do focus on particular domains. Like for instance, in Singapore, we looked at e-governance and also transport. we've been fortunate in being able to gather expert interviews in each of these countries with key policymakers, as well as experts from the various industries that we look into. In Hong Kong, we look at fintech, and in Korea, it's been very much e-health and telemedicine. So yeah, that project, I think for me, has been quite interesting because it doesn't just look at the policy aspects, but for me, it's also very much about citizens and the cultures, the kinds of data cultures that in every country, right, can shape how citizens kind of interpret the regulations and what they see as necessary data protections. So yeah, that's been my project so far. And we're at the stage of finalizing all the reports that I expect to release in the next couple of months.
Great. Well, we look forward to the reports coming out, but can you give us any sneak previews of some of your findings? You just spoke now about citizens' cultures of data being very important. And the cultural aspect of data, data governance, data protection is something that we haven't explored very explicitly in this series so far, but something that I'm quite interested in myself because I do think it does differ quite a lot from context to context. So is there anything that you can share with us just now before the report comes out?
Oh, there's so much to talk about, I think. Yeah, what I do find that across all the cases we've looked into, citizens do sort of unilaterally fear disclosing personal data, especially in countries where there have been very high profile data breaches. It's sort of inflection points for them to realize that their personal data may be at risk, right? But I think what's also been interesting for me is, I guess, going back to the period, right? Or rather the context that's informing my project, which is the COVID-19 pandemic, right? So across all the countries we've been able to kind of look into, we do find that even though citizens have this fear about losing control over their data, they fear identity theft or some kind of misconduct associated with sharing or like compromising their personal data, there is some sense that if there is some collective social good, there is a greater acceptance for actually sharing personal data. Now, what's interesting for me looking at these kinds of insights and findings coming out of the reports then is, what should we do post-pandemic, right? When there is this level of acceptance of for personal data to be shared and used to better the pandemic, right? In order for this perceived, collective social good to be achieved, there are certain innovations, certain frameworks that are put in place to collect a lot of such personal data. So the big question is, what happens post-pandemic? Would that, increase the appetite for surveillance, greater surveillance? And to what extent will data collection be something for service, for collective social good? And to what extent it becomes some kind of surveillance on citizens? So that's the big question I have kind of lingering at this point, right? I think the other thing that I found is that a lot of the conversations about data protection has been very, across the countries, has been very much driven by states and technological companies, not so much participation, right, from citizens. So I think it is an opportunity in a way, right? And countries have to start seriously think about how their citizens can play a part, you know, in terms of decision making, in terms of policy making, when it comes to personal data protection, because that, I think, is absolutely essential, especially when it comes to building trust and and minimizing distrust, right? That's the other side of the coin.
Yeah, definitely. And again, I think themes that are very apparent kind of elsewhere as well, particularly the COVID-19 context, where a huge amount of personal data is being collected and used. And in many cases, as you I think rightly say, it's for a kind of social good and it's an emergency situation. But what happens after the pandemic, I think, is a really key question in all respects, and what's going to happen to that data, and will the kind of balance change yet? I think many governments and companies are quite happy with all this data as well.
Yeah, indeed. And I just want to add also, right, I think when we talk about citizens, there are like different groups of citizens as well. And for me, what's what I am particularly, I guess, concerned about are citizens that may be a bit more vulnerable because of their relatively lower digital literacy or just general literacy, right? Yeah, and my concern is that data gaps in terms of data protection can arise, especially when it comes to these more vulnerable populations. So I think, we have to be very careful. You know, policymakers need to also look into how data protection, or rather lapse in data protection, may be more pronounced amongst disadvantaged or more vulnerable populations.
Have there been any solutions to that in any of the countries that you've looked at? Any best practice around inclusiveness, digital literacy, around data protection for vulnerable people?
I think especially during this pandemic, there's been some interest, I would say, across all the countries in terms of digital, sometimes they call it digital divides, right? But I think the problem is that there's still a lot of focus on access, but not so much looking at the problem from the perspective of data. Vulnerable groups, especially, I would argue, experience privacy, you know, in a different way, experience data protection in a different way from many other people. For many of them, in order to get a service, they have to surrender a lot of personal data in order to qualify for a scholarship, for some benefits. They have to surrender a lot of personal data. So big question is, what happens to all this personal data? How are they managed? How is such personal data protected? And how do these vulnerable populations actually participate in making decisions about their personal data? That's something I think is a gap that not many countries are looking at.
Definitely. And again, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I think this is a common theme across a lot of countries around kind of data protection and privacy for different groups in society, or as you say, there being a different meaning of these terms. In fact, that brings me to another question about really whether in general are notions of privacy or data protection well understood terms among normal people, the general public in your region, or are they something which seems very technocratic or something that is not really a native term, or it sounds sort of foreign? I know in some languages, including European languages, for privacy, the English term privacy is used, which I think shows that it's not really a normal or a native concept. So at least from either from your work or from your own experience, what do you think about this? Do normal people understand privacy and data protection or not?
That's an excellent question. And the answer is no. I don't think they understand that very well. And I guess a few things I could talk about, right, to kind of support my conclusion. When in the course of doing interviews in my project, when talking to experts, we do often find that, the experts are very well versed, you know, in terms of the issues associated with data protection and privacy and all the governance associated with personal data. But they also share that in their own countries, the lay citizens actually may not understand these issues very well. They may be very concerned about their personal data, but in terms of where their personal data actually goes to, how it's processed, how it moves from place to place, what happens, you know, during, I guess, anonymization or pseudonymization. That is not very clear to citizens. And as such, they can either be very trusting, or rather, yeah, another word is they don't really want to find out, right? You know, in terms of what happens. It's either that on, they are either on that end of the spectrum or on the other end of the spectrum where they are totally distrusting about sharing any kinds of personal data. So I think it's not good to be on either extreme. Let me just maybe illustrate how it can make things like informed consent moot, right? When these kinds of understanding is low. So yeah, without sharing, you know, about which country it came from, right? But there was an interviewee that shared an anecdote with me to say that, yeah, we follow, you know, the this principle of informed consent, right? But in my country, most people just think, see as additional paperwork, additional thing to go through, right? They don't read and they don't really want to know about informed consent. They just want to get to the service. And I think that's a good illustration of what it means to not have that understanding about data protection and privacy issues. And therefore, right, not having that understanding makes interventions like informed consent kind of moot in a way. It becomes less meaningful, right, for the person that's actually saying I approve, I or I consent. The other thing I draw on is this series of citizens dialogue that I organized in Singapore sometime towards the end of last year. And this was the We the Internet Citizens Dialogue. More than 70 countries got together and organized sort of a concurrent dialogues, right, in their own countries with their 100 citizens in each country. So I was leading the citizens dialogue in Singapore. And we talked about so many things during the, yeah, We the Internet Citizens Dialogue. There were so many things that we touched on, from misinformation and disinformation to data protection to like internet addiction and so on. But the one thing that citizens, or rather participants in my dialogue sessions, consistently said that they have very little knowledge of is data. That doesn't mean they are not concerned about their data. I think in Singapore, from the young to the older adults in Singapore, they are quite aware that their personal data is important, and there is the Personal Data Protection Act that actually looks after, you know, the protection of their data. But in terms of where data goes to, what are the ongoing issues associated with their data, and yeah, the different models or different governance ways to govern data, I think that is something that is consistently rated as something they don't know about. Sorry for a very long response, but my answer to that is, yeah, I think for citizens, the knowledge is low, especially when it comes to how their personal data is actually governed, how it's protected.
Yes, very interesting stuff. To continue this theme a little bit, you've spoken about these citizen dialogues, which sound really fascinating and probably quite challenging to organise across different countries, including during the pandemic. Can you tell us a bit more about the involvement of civil society, NGOs, for instance, in your region around data governance or digital literacy issues? Have they been active? Do they face barriers to being active, perhaps in some countries as well? Or have these been topics that actually traditional NGOs and civil society is not very engaged in?
From what I can see, yeah, the experience, or rather the landscapes actually look quite different from country to country. And this has to do with the state of civil society in each country. I think in Singapore, because of Singapore's culture, the state plays a very active role in driving the conversations, the states as well as key technological players right here. But I do see that from country to country, that's actually quite different. In places like India, as well as Taiwan, civil society plays an active role in also debating the like digital bill, for instance. In Taiwan, especially, I think for me, what's been very interesting to learn about is also the way the Taiwanese government actually design citizens' participation, right? In terms of collecting data and using data. That's actually been very interesting to look at. And when I look at actually, across the countries, right? I think there's no one story. Each country kind of has its own story as to the extent of active participation from civil society. So in India, there are actually civil society groups that are actively looking at the issue of data protection. So yeah, by extension, they are actively involved in the thinking, the deliberation about data protection. Not so much for other countries that don't really have these civil society groups, right?
Very interesting to hear. So what about some other important stakeholder groups when it comes to data protection and data governance? How has the private sector been engaging in these debates and in these activities in the region? Has the private sector worked alongside the public sector and policymakers to create and uphold data protection laws and engage in other data governance activities? Or has the public sector been operating quite separately from the private sector?
Yeah, I do see that actually across the countries, the drive in terms of digitalization and data protection, they are driven primarily by the state as well as the private sector. But what they drive is a bit different. So private sectors, I think quite often they drive the hardware, the technological aspects of development, whereas the state actually often plays the role of driving the regulation. They are quite often the legal arbitrator, right? So I see more of the private sector, I guess, working more with the public sector. Specifically, I guess they work with the state, right? But they don't work so much, I think, directly with the people sector. Again, I think this is maybe perhaps an opportunity to do more of, right? Especially when there are some private enterprises, right? Whatever they decide to do with regards to privacy and data protection actually has a direct impact on the people. And I think there's a lot more room, right, and opportunity to engage the people directly.
So great. We like to finish by looking into the future. Can you tell us what you think the future of data governance, data protection activities in the region over the next few years is going to be? And how important would these developments be? What kind of impact internationally will they have as well?
The value of data, I think, is not by now actually typically viewed in terms of being central to driving either economic developments or driving very public governance efficiency to a certain extent. Across the countries, data is viewed as something like an asset, right? And it's because it's an asset, it's something to be used. And there is an impetus, an inherent, I guess, motivation across the countries, right, to take advantage of these trends of digitalization as well as data and all its very derivative forms. Moving forward, right, looking to the future, I think I've mentioned quite a few opportunities, we need to pay attention to, right, especially in terms of looking at how citizens can be engaged more. When we think about the future, we have to think about data participation. Engaging citizens, to me, is something that is actually not really happening on a large scale at the moment. And I think there needs to be more of that. I guess for me, the bottom line is if citizens don't trust the process, they don't trust the institutions, be it a private or a public institution that's collecting and using data, how will they participate? How will they get involved and be part of this innovations, right? Data innovations in the future. Companies especially, right? There's also an opportunity for them to try to look into engaging people, the citizens actually, in a more direct way. Right now, right, I think the relationship between, for many companies, for many private entities, is one of compliance. The state sets kind of the regulations, and for private entities, quite often they are paying attention and focusing on compliance, right? But I would argue that they need to do more than compliance to really take advantage and scale up the kinds of innovations that's necessary for the future.
Thanks so much, Natalie. Now to finish, I'm going to ask you three more quick questions. I will start the sentence and you can finish it. So data protection is so big in Singapore because?
It's the new oil.
Data protection still needs to get better at?
Citizens' engagement.
And finally, the rule of law rules because?
That's the principle.
Thanks so much for joining us today, Natalie.
Thank you.
So this was the sixth episode of the Rule of Law Rules podcast with me, Angela Daly, and our guest, Natalie Pang. In the show notes, you can find out more about Natalie, links to her work, and more information about the Konrad Adenauer Foundation and its Rule of Law programme, which this podcast is part of. Please be sure to subscribe to our channel, where we will release new Rule of Law Rules episodes at the end of every month. If you have liked this episode, then please give us a good rating and tell your data law geek friends about us too. I hope you've enjoyed our podcast. See you next time.